to take apart somebody's argument who shouldn't have been making it in the first place. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my good friend and fellow analyst, Chuck Michaelis.
Raring to go to dismantle some more fallacies.
And that's what we're doing, ladies and gentlemen. If you were with us on yesterday's program, you know that we started talking about an article in the Sunday Columbus Dispatch by a guest columnist by the name of Steve Rissig. Steve is a professor of biology at The Ohio State University. And as a matter of fact, and I didn't mention this yesterday, Chuck, but Steve teaches an introductory biology class that all incoming freshmen must take if they're going into the department, where he basically teaches them that evolution is the only thing that's true. It's biological evolution 101, and he teaches it. And you have to take it and pass it in order to get into the program. So in other words, you talk about a person who wants to judge things, as he says later, by testing an hypothesis. That's not what he wants. He wants everybody to basically bow down to his presupposition, which is evolution is true. Man is causing all of these things to happen in our climate, and therefore we must change our policies and regulate and destroy man's liberty in order to save the environment.
Barry, what you've just pointed out is the fact that evolution is not science. It is a faith.
Yes, it is a faith.
It is a faith because what it requires is that you believe in a theory for which there is very little evidence. In other words, that there are complete hierarchies of fossils that very often include animals which have never had a single solitary fossil found, and yet scientists will say, well, that animal had to exist in that tree someplace in order for these changes to have occurred and having yielded this next evolutionary step. There are other things involved. Rissing, if you ask him questions, I'm sure, on the basis of the origin of life, he will come completely unglued.
He almost comes completely unglued on this issue with climate change, because if you look in his article, Chuck, he basically, after he gives us all that list of various things that he's using to build his case, which includes the cherry trees in Washington, D.C. blooming a week earlier than the National Cherry Blossom Festival start. Maybe they moved the festival date a little bit too far ahead, and that they missed the opening of the cherry blossom.
Here's the problem. What Rissing is arguing is something that he would adamantly have said last year wouldn't count, and that is he's claiming that weather isn't the same as climate.
Yes, he is. That's exactly what he's doing.
And that is a logical fallacy extraordinaire. It's an equivocation. Weather is not climate. Are we having a warmer year this year than we had last year? And if you'll look in here, he talks about how there's snow cover, maps showing a reduction in snow cover for North America in 2012 compared to 2011. Year-to-year comparisons are meaningless.
Meaningless for long-term predictions of climate.
Absolutely meaningless. Because
to the uneducated, the uninitiated, these are just stellar facts backing up what he then rolls into, and this is where he's getting at, Chuck, and you see it. It's right after the whole issue with the cherry blossoms, where he basically states his hypothesis. Yes. No one, and this I'm quoting from Steve Rissing's article, no one seriously doubts that the carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are rising. And he talks about a rate growing. No one seriously doubts that the increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is a result of burning fossil fuels and cutting and burning forests. And no one seriously doubts that the global mean temperatures are rising. And then he says, in the past 30 years, the global mean temperature has increased by about a half a degree Celsius.
All right, he just pulled the bait and switch fallacy on us here. He's right. No one doubts, no one, that CO2 levels have increased. And no one doubts that increased carbon dioxide is because we're burning fossil fuels. And he says it's cutting forests and burning them. The world forest cover is not changing all that much. We used to hear these stories about how the Amazon rainforest was disappearing at some like 100 acres a minute or something. And if you sat down with a calculator, you figured out that it actually all disappeared a week ago last Tuesday. And it's now the Amazon desert. Except when you see a satellite fly over it, believe me, it's still a jungle. But then he uses these things that we agree to say, well, over the last 30 years, they've increased by 15%, a rate that continues to grow with no signs of stopping. No one seriously doubts that global mean temperatures are rising. Yes, we do doubt that because the global surface temperature data has been flat for 12 years. So yes, we do doubt that. And the upper atmosphere temperatures have actually been falling. So, do we doubt that? Yes. Now, what he's trying to claim here is he has used a false logical progression. You agree to this, you agree to this, and therefore you must agree
to
this.
To the next. That's right.
Now, the conclusion does not follow from the facts. The amount of correlation between CO2 and surface temperature is something like 40-some percent. That's very poor correlation. Very poor.
But Chuck, in case there was somebody like you out there reading this article, he goes and pulls his next trump card out of his deck with his next paragraph where he says, almost all scientists and related professionals who collect and analyze data about climate change or its effect on biological systems agree that the increased carbon dioxide levels cause much of the climate change and warming.
And that's absolutely false.
Well, it's a bandwagon appeal.
Yes, and it's a false one.
Yes, it is.
They pulled this thing off. The IPCC pulled this thing off several years ago where they had all these quote-unquote scientists sign on to this petition to show that all these people agreed that the increased CO2 amounts were causing global warming. Well, it turns out some people did some vetting of the signatures, and huge percentages of the signatures weren't scientists at all. They were bureaucrats. They were department heads who were doing no research. They were government officials. They were department heads of government agencies. All kinds of weird things. And then as that particular crack began to show in the data, another group, and I can't remember who it was now, Michael Kaufman, who we're going to be interviewing, was actually part of this group that sent around a petition that people signed that said, it's become obvious that the CO2 levels in the atmosphere are not necessarily causing global warming, and global warming is not necessarily man-made. The mechanisms are far more complex than the man-made global warming advocates are claiming. And the fact is that increased solar activity shows a much higher correlation. So several thousand scientists have signed that petition. So this idea that Rissing is pointing to here, that the vast majority, if you'll recall Al Gore's famous statement, the debate is over. Declaring the debate over doesn't mean that the debate is actually over, especially when you declare the debate over when you stuff a gag in everybody else's mouth and don't let them talk, which is exactly what went on during the 90s and thousands.
And Steve Rissing's carrying this on here, Chuck, because I want to get to this before the end of today's program. And this is the situation. He keeps going through here, and he starts talking about the holdout skeptics. So he says, how do the holdout skeptics propose to test their hypothesis that no link exists between carbon dioxide increases and climate change effects? And then he gives his punchline. Good science demands explanations and hypotheses that can be tested. Okay, fair enough, Steve. We're going to go there. Because, as you said later, quoting Thomas Kuhn, political philosopher of science, said that the ability and willingness to submit one's hypothesis to testing and possible rejection forms a core component of effective science. And he says, indeed, without it, one really isn't practicing science. He or she is practicing advocacy at best, or maybe self-promotion. And then he keeps throwing this thing about, well, the holdout skeptics say da-da-da-da. His last paragraph, Chuck, is where the coup de grace comes in. How will we know we're there? What will it take for them to abandon their no-effect hypothesis? In other words, what he's saying is, I'm not willing to test mine. Mine is truth. I won't submit it to testing and possible invalidation because I don't have to.
Steve Rissing has just exposed himself as applying his own presupposition regarding biology to his presupposition regarding global warming. My position is the correct one. You are the one that has to provide proof. I don't have to provide anything since the preponderance of evidence is with me. And I say, if it is, then show it, Steve.
Well, he just did, Chuck. In this article, he had at least 7 or 8 bullet points, which we've now spent 2 programs totally tearing apart because they have nothing to do directly with the thesis, which is climate change actually happening, and is it man-made, and is it detrimental? These are the questions Steve will not ask, and he certainly doesn't want to answer them based upon this article, where he believes that by the force of his wit and his argument, there should be no one out there who would support the holdout skeptics who would challenge Steve Rissing in this issue.
We're not the only ones calling this into question. This is an article in the Columbus Dispatch, and I will be placing a link to it so that people can read for themselves. Because they should use this program, get a recording of it, because it'll be posted on our website next week sometime, or this week, pardon me. And get a copy of this newspaper article and go along and read the sections that we read and see that we're not correct in our assessments of the quote-unquote logical assertions made by Steve Rissing in this. There's a letter to the editor on the online version by a man named Doug Allen. Let me read you part of this. A biology professor cites some weather events as evidence for global warming. See, he just asked the same question we did. Weather events are not climate change. Come on, Steve Rissing. I've been an environmental educator and conservationist all my life. I'm also conversant with climate science and no scientific method. Your weather statements mean about as much as last winter's record snow. And there we go again. Year-to-year snow measurements are meaningless. Statements of warmest decade or the ratio of record highs and record lows or sea level rise are all half-truths. Yes, the ratio of record highs and lows has been increasing not for a few decades, the time period that CO2 is hypothesized to be the principal driving force, but for 300 years. Remember, this is a man who claims to be an environmentalist. The instrumental temperature record use of thermometers began about 300 years ago during the Little Ice Age. It's been getting warmer ever since, or about 0.7 degrees C per century. Obviously, after 300 years of warming, there will be more record highs than record lows, and many decades throughout that 300-year period have been the warmest ever in the instrumental record. We've only got 300 years of global weather data, serious instrument-taken temperature data. The warming has been uneven with, for example, two significant warming periods last century from about 1920 to 1942, and again from 1978 to 1998, which are statistically very similar, despite the lack of CO2 forcing during the earlier period, according to the IPCC. From 1942 till 1978, there was a slight cooling. From 1998 until now, global temperatures have flatlined, so there has been only 20 years of warming in the past 68 years.
Yes, that's right.
Two-sevenths. That's not a very high percentage.
No, it's not.
Though scientists agree that CO2 is a greenhouse gas and that CO2 emissions and atmospheric concentration is increasing because of man's activities, there's no agreement on climate sensitivity, that is, how much difference the extra CO2 will make. Some models like Hansen's increasingly discredited models, that's the hockey stick graph, project catastrophic warming of 6 degrees for a doubling of CO2. Most project 2 or 3 degrees. Some project less than 1 degree. Models are not evidence. A model is only as good as the hypothesis and the science behind it, and the hockey stick model is a piece of junk. Models are not evidence. They are hypotheses that require confirmation by the empirical record, the temperature record. Despite a warm winter and very warm March in the eastern U.S., global temperatures continue to flatline, and polar ice, which some models projected to decrease significantly, are at average levels for the satellite era, which is only 1978 until now. Barry, it's become obvious that Rissing's been caught with his pants around his ankles on this article, and yet, of course, he will say nothing.
I want to give kudos to Mr. Allen, who wrote this letter on the comment section of this article, which I doubt Steve Rissing's ever going to reply to, because he said two things in it toward the end that I think are very important. He said, first, propaganda is about pushing a narrative or agenda where there is insufficient or contradictory scientific evidence. He's got it right. That's what Steve Rissing's doing. It's propaganda. The second thing he said was, if journalists and others, some biologists, and we all know who he was talking about there, yes, did their homework, those with an agenda would not be able to spread half-truths, and science would not be compromised by those with strong bias or agenda, like Hansen, the hockey stick guy, who told Congress in 1988 that by 2010, parts of New York City would probably be underwater. I think that he really gets into this point of the fact that, without directly pointing to him, he's basically telling Steve Rissing, you can do better than this. Don't go in for these half-truths. Do the research. Find out that what you're saying, your hypothesis is wrong. Test your hypothesis, Dr. Rissing, and see if you will put it up to the scientific method to have it tested to whether or not it's valid. And obviously, Chuck, we've been testing it for the last two programs, and I think we've come up with the answer. This fails the test.
the fact is we're out of time, so we do have to sign off. Unfortunately, Dr. Rissing has essentially proven that he is an ideologue, not someone who's actually applying the scientific method. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.